Howdy-do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, January 11th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. We are wrapping up CES coverage today, so I have our two live on-the-floor correspondents at CES. They're all home safely now. Dave Hamilton, thanks for coming on, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be here from home. So, yeah.
Also glad to be here from home, Mr. John F. Braun. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. I'm glad you have me. I'm surprised you have me back.
Well,
last time,
you know, we weren't going to talk about it, but, you know, we'll see. All right. So I want to talk to you guys about CES because we talked about it earlier this week. But at that point, you had sort of CES, for people who don't know, does have sort of a show floor component where you walk around in the convention center in Las Vegas and there are many booths. And I don't have enough time to express to you with the right amount of many's how many booths we're actually talking about. And CES is even bigger than that. And so you two were there actually taking meetings and seeing demos and other things at events even before the show floor opened. You were both sort of pretty much done at that point. So now we want to talk about, yeah, so because there's so much more to CES than just what happens in the convention center. So I want to talk to you specifically about the show floor because we had talked about some stuff that you had seen that was interesting and cool before the show floor opened. And now you've got all of the rest of the meetings of the week and show floor that we can discuss. So, John, let's start with you.
Oh, as far as what I saw?
Yeah, like the kind of stuff you saw and if you noticed anything overall, like trend-wise with what you're seeing at CES?
Yes, I did. So I'm looking at one of the things that I did a little scribble on here. And this is an interesting direction that I think things are taking here. So Kwikset showed some new, what they call smart locks.
Okay.
Interesting thing. the protocol that they're using. So they came out with one called Aura, which uses Bluetooth.
Okay.
Highly unusual, but these guys are they're taking a different approach with these two products here. So Aura is a Bluetooth thing. So what you need is a device that talks Bluetooth within range of the lock in order to do something smart with it. But it's also low cost. So that I think was an interesting trend is that I've seen more and more people come out with products that don't necessarily require a smart hub. You just talk to them directly.
Okay.
So they introduced that, and then they introduced another one called Halo, and this is using Wi-Fi. And in both cases, they're specifically saying, hey, you don't need a smart home hub in order to use this product. It'll use your existing infrastructure.
Okay. I am very interested in how people are solving that problem, because that's been one of my biggest resistors to adding more stuff to what I already have. Is that I'm basically out of Ethernet places to plug in another one of these hubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to say, John, the Halo ones you can access remotely, right? Because they're Wi-Fi capable, whereas the Bluetooth one, to your point, John, you have to be within range, so you can't be at the grocery store and say, oh, crap, I want to lock the door, or I want to unlock the door, or whatever. Uh-huh. You have to be right there. Yep. So, but like you said, lower cost.
Right.
Yeah, and it does smart, locky stuff. You know, you can program it and, you know, give certain people access and all that thing. It's just you have to be within range of it.
So you have to be within range to operate it. So if somebody who doesn't have access...
To interact, but I mean, you can still, you know, so it has, you know, it has buttons, so you can press the buttons.
Okay.
You know, it's not like it won't work if you're not... But in order to interact with it and make it do the smart things or to configure it.
Right. That's all happening over Bluetooth instead of. Okay. See, I feel like
it's actually pretty cool. They will like I could assign, say, a code for just you, Kelly, and then a code for just you, John. And then if it's Wi-Fi, then, of course, it's connected to the network all the time. If it's Bluetooth, it's not. But when in range, you can slurp down the history data, mm-hmm. and I could say, oh, I know when, so I know when Kelly came home, I know when John came, like, uh-huh. and, which could be very interesting. You're not just seeing the door was open, you're saying the door was open using, you know, Kelly's code or using John's code. So you can have this history interesting for families and that sort of thing, like who mm-hmm. was here, what happened, all of that good stuff. So
right. Yeah. And particularly when you have to grant access regularly, maybe to people who don't live there, like you have a dog walker yeah. or you have a house cleaner or somebody that regularly needs access. I've been interested because smart locks have been around a long time, and I've sort of been waiting for somebody to find a better way to solve some of this stuff. Like the mesh networking stuff is super great, but I installed a smart lock on the side door in my garage and it doesn't work most of the time remotely. I have to use the keypad on it, and it doesn't work remotely because it keeps falling off the network because somehow it's at the at the edge of the acceptable range, and I can't seem to get it to stay connected. So it's been kind of the only, and that's the only one I have that's the smart lock. So for me, it's been sort of frustrating. So I've been looking for people who are finding ways to make sure that that door that's far away from everything else, you know, at the back of the garage or, you know, at the opposite end of the house or whatever, and solve that problem. And it sounds like just using Bluetooth so that the only way you can operate it is when you're in front of it might be a good way to do that.
Mm. Pretty cool.
Because you don't have to worry about it being on the network. It doesn't have to be on the network. The only time you can actually do anything with it is when you're standing there in front of it, you know, and if that's how you just do the management, like assigning codes and stuff, I don't mind going and standing in front of the door to assign new codes or, you know, do any of that sort of stuff. Like that wouldn't be a big deal. So yep. being able to simplify that piece of it and then make that one less thing that I have to troubleshoot when, say, the power goes out and comes back on and now nothing can connect to the Wi-Fi anymore or whatever. Finding those things and solving them, like this sounds like a solution that came from somebody that has a smart lock in their house and is actually using it and finding ways that it is failing and finding a better way to make that work.
Yeah, and another trend, you know, so when I did talk to some people, you know, so they would see, oh, Mac Observer, they're like, hey, you know, our product works with the HomeKit. And I'm like, you know what? I don't care.
I don't either, but I think we're the minority, John. And part of that is that we got a lot of HomeKit announcing at CES this year. And that's been a thing. That's a thing that I have watched with some interest, mostly because remember for so long, it was all about how nothing could get HomeKit certified. Like we had it, but there were like three things that you could buy that were actually HomeKit certified that you could add to your network. And it was that way for a long, long time. And so having all of this stuff start coming out at once, like we've had a little trickle over the last year or so, but in the last couple of months, it seems like there's been a number of announcements. You know, one of the big ones at CES was all of the AirPlay 2 and HomeKit stuff, you know, that's coming to a lot of devices.
Yeah. And I mean, the reason when I said I don't care for my personal situation, so the thing is, I've standardized on the Wink Hub, and let me explain to me why that's important. So, for example, one thing that I don't have, is a humidity sensor.
Okay.
And I actually did talk to one company. They're like, hey, we got a HomeKit, you know, humidity sensor. And I'm like, yeah, but you see, the problem is, so my environment now is Wink. And that's how I program things. The thing is, I can't jump into another realm. So
yeah, you can.
Well, I don't think I can do it easily.
You can.
Not from the Wink environment.
You can. This is what we talk about on Mac Geek Out, right? You can, no, seriously, you can, that's the beauty of things like IFT and Stringify, right? Because you can pull and even but certainly HomeKit if everything's compatible with it, but if things are compatible with, say, you know, your Amazon A Lady, mm-hmm. you can use these things to stitch together different incompatible otherwise and or different manufacturers' devices, so you can have a sensor, and as long as that sensor is something that can trigger an IFT recipe or a Stringify recipe, or even, and there's some of this happening with the, you know, the Amazon A Lady. Mm-hmm. If you can have it trigger that, then you could have, say, your humidity sensor turn on a light and set it red, even though the humidity sensor is made by a different company than the one that makes your Wink Hub, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to live in the Wink app. That's the beauty of IFT and Stringify and those sorts of things.
Well, and the beauty of stuff like A-Lady is that all of the actual management of like what my lights do when they turn on and off, what color they are, all those kinds of things. Those are like all of the stuff that goes along with automating some of that, and like what happens, you know, like the motion sensor I have on the light for the stairs and stuff like that. Like that all happens within the Hue app in order to manage all of that stuff. But just to casually interact with them, turn them on, turn them off, set them to movies, set them to reading, turn them blue, whatever, I can tell the A-Lady to do that.
You got it.
And it's fine.
And you can have an IFT recipe do it, right?
Right.
Too. Like, yeah.
And I could, if I had bothered to sit down and work through my aggravation with the Home app, I could have the S-Lady do the same thing. And none of that has anything to do with what is actually managing those, whether it's a SmartThings hub or a Wink hub or some third option, you know, like what we've got at my house. Like whatever's doing the actual work of that has nothing to do with whether or not I can tell a voice assistant to turn them on, turn them off, or adjust things in some way. So like you can have the humidity sensor working that for you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And notify you in some way without having to do the other stuff.
Let me put it another way. It'd be easier for me to deploy a Z-Wave humidity sensor because I could then write something within the Wink environment rather than my having to do an IFTTT or something else. Because honestly, I think that would be beyond most people to figure out how to do that sort of thing. That's getting...
It's really not... It's not that geeky.
Setting up something with IFT is way easier than having to write a thing to address a Wink Hub. I swear to you, I've done both.
Totally. IFT is going to be easier for this, John. Yeah.
Yes.
So you would say like someone like maybe your parents, no problem. They'd be able to whip up a script to do this sort of thing.
No, because there's no scripting in IFT. You point and you click. I have this sensor. Okay. What do you want to do with it? When it goes off, I want it to text me and say, the humidity sensor went off. Okay. Where do you want to be texted? Here's my phone number. All right, save it. And now you're done. Okay. That's all there is to IFT. Yes.
I disagree.
Have you played with IFT?
Lately?
No, then you can't disagree.
You're not allowed.
Seriously, you're not allowed. Yeah, you gotta do it. No,
I'll be right back. I'm going to borrow John Martellaro's bell, the one that he dings when he thinks that I'm wrong. Bing.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So because IFT is going to be much easier than telling my parents, you just have to write a little bit of script in order to interact with the Home Hub. No, that's not going to happen. So but what my parents can do is I set you up an IFT account. Here's your password. Go fill out this piece of information so that it does what you want it to do, you know, so the text message says what you want it to say, or that you get some sort of push notification if you have an Android device or whatever. And it's very easy to do. It's very, very easy to do.
Very easy.
Yes. Yeah. And it has been easy. It just gets easier to do over time because it's even easier to do now than it was when I set up the IFT recipe I use for my Christmas tree. So, yeah.
Honestly, I find IFT and Stringify easier to use. Stringify far more complex than IFT, to be fair. So I'll say IFT. I find IFT way easier to use than most of the vendor specific apps.
Absolutely.
That are out there. Yeah.
Okay. So all right.
I have a variety of IFT things that happen because I didn't have the patience to figure out how to do it in the app for the thing that I was trying to manage.
Okay. I'd much rather do it within. I'd rather write a recipe, if you will, or program it within the Wink environment or Wink app than to have to write a script.
That's fine. But to say it's easier is just misleading. We just don't want people to think that IFT is a difficult thing to use.
IFT is really not. And
I saw some things at CES.
How about it involves more work if you have to do other...
It doesn't involve
more work. It's way less.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. Way less.
Well, when I get my HomeKit humidity sensor, I'm going to come to you guys and you can show me how to
We'll do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go okay, yeah. So and I'm cool. going to as soon as we're done, I'm going to tell the S lady to remind me to write up this afternoon setting up a really easy IFT recipe. I want to find out though, Dave, what you saw at CES once the show floor opened, because last time we spoke it wasn't even open yet.
It wasn't. No, there were many cool things that I saw on the show floor. Things that make life easier. The hyper, you know, the people that make sort of accessories for all sorts of things.
Yeah.
They have an AirPods case with a Qi charger in it. It looks just like the AirPods case. It's a little bigger because it has to fit the case in.
Right.
And in the bottom, it's got a little lightning port. A little lightning connector, and you drop the case into this, then you can sort of close the things, and it starts to look like those little, you know, Russian dolls with the
nesting dolls, yeah.
The nesting dolls, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So it does. It nests together.
So it's a little bit like when you put a battery case on your phone.
Exactly.
Like, it contains this extra little piece of technology, so it wraps around it's like a case
for.
So that actually sounds really cool, especially since the one that Apple swore they were shipping in 2018 didn't ship.
Didn't ship. Nope. So this one's $20, and they said they like
20
and are. That's it.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right. So $20. Just put it on your AirPods, and it like even if you only need it for 6 months, because then sometime this summer Apple finally releases their wireless AirPods case that you want to actually use or whatever. But still, $20. Okay, you're good to go. Like you're not investing $100 here. So, yeah,
right.
So
and especially if you have one of those little mat, you know, a little coaster, you know, that you can set your phone on. You can just set your AirPods on that instead, right?
Yeah, and
it
so
just works Hyper, with things that are Qi chargers.
It works with things that are Qi chargers. That's okay. Right. And Hyper has a mat that they're coming out with.
Of course they do.
Yeah, and it's actually a cool little mat. So, it's got like multiple things on it. There were several of those sort of multi-device charging mats or solutions, I should say. Mm-hmm. Skoshi had one. I'm sorry, I always mispronounce
Skosh.
The name. Skosh, yes.
I love Skosh. I have a lot of their stuff, and it's there's no official disclosing relationship. I've bought a bunch of their cables and a bunch of their gear because I like it. So there's
my disclosure. Good stuff. They have a thing called BaseLinks that, again, solves this problem in a modular way. They've got a bunch of different modules that you plug together,
ooh,
and they're all built to do your charging. So you can have one they've got one that's got an Apple Watch, you know, puck in it, if you will. They have one that just has a normal, you know, 10 watt Qi or up to 10 watt Qi thing. They have, for your non-Qi devices, they've got this thing that has like slots in it, and it's got a couple of USB-A and a USB-C with power delivery port on the back that you can plug with cables into the things that you sort of drop into the slots. Yeah, it's called BaseLinks. And again, you just plug them all together.
And they snap together. You snap them together however you want to, whatever you've got that needs charging.
Yep. And they've even got an end cap. Like they all come with just sort of, you know, non-powered end caps so that you've got at least something to, you know, to not, so you don't have the connector just dangling
hanging out.
Loosely.
Yeah.
But they also make a powered end cap that has a 12 volt USB-A and an 18 watt USB-C with power delivery. So it's perfect for like the iPad Pro and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That sounds cool.
Yeah. It is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's nice to see it's nice to see these sorts of things just sort of coming into the mainstream and lots of options for people. One of the Skosh had one, but lots of people had been solving the in-car problem of I want to have a wireless charger, fine, but I also want to have something that grips my phone, like a dash mount or a suction mount or whatever. And a few different ways people have solved this problem where when your phone gets in proximity to the grip, a motor closes the grip around your phone.
Oh,
Skosh is doing it by sensing for Qi charging to start. So as soon as it like the Qi signal
starts
up, yep, their motor closes. And then I think somebody else was doing it with, like, you know, motion sensing or, you know, breaking an IR beam or something like that. But yeah, like, these sorts of things are cool because you've got power in there anyway, because it's got a Qi charger.
Right.
Aha. We, you know, we can power a small little motor, and then that way you're not trying to futz with the thing while you're, you know, while you're in the car, which is super handy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's cool stuff.
And this is the kind of stuff that I was waiting to see after after we got the announcement last fall, not 18 but 17, with the iPhone 8 and iPhone 10, that they, when they declared, we've decided Qi charging is the way at Apple.
I assumed
that was going to be the thing. You know, I said at the time that, you know, this is the VHS Betamax wireless charging standard war, and now it's done. And now I can't wait to see what happens now that everybody sort of decided that Qi charging is the thing. And this is what's coming out of it. And, you know, it was nice that Apple announced a solution that looked really nice and was going to do all this stuff. But it's nice to see that other companies aren't necessarily waiting on that. And,
you know,
being able to charge whatever you've got. So if you've got an iPhone 8 or some flavor of 10, whatever that may be, and you've got maybe a watch or, you know, $20 to Hyper and, you know, your AirPods too, can all charge just by setting on this thing. And it's one of those technologies where, you know, you think of it, well, I think of it sort of like the microwave, where, like, you got it and you sort of wondered how it was going to fit into your life. And now that you have it in a place or two, then it's the best thing. Like, you know, now I'm like, oh, I have to plug in a cable. Like, I sigh deeply and roll my eyes when that's a thing that has to happen because the wireless is so much better.
Yeah. Here's the weird thing, though. My observation with the Qi thing is that the fast charge is different depending on what platform you're on.
Oh, that's true.
Of course. Yeah.
But it's 7.5. Last I checked, it's 7.5 watts for Apple, 10 watts for Samsung stuff. And it's like, why can't Apple do 10 watts?
Well, even 7.5 is really impressive, you know, time-wise. Like, that's pretty great. So, Dave, was there anything else that you saw?
There was one really cool. Like, you know, I always go to CES and look for something cool that I've never seen before. And there were several, in fact, but there was one that really blew me away. Before I say that, I do want to acknowledge that our CES coverage would not have been possible without our awesome CES coverage sponsors, including Carbon Copy Cloner from Bombic, Otherworld Computing at MacSales.com, and Text Expander from Smile. So I can't thank each of them enough for stepping up and helping us make sure that we could be there and cover the things and, like, do it the right way. So thank you. The cool thing that I saw was from a company called Ultra Haptics. They are what some would call an integration partner. They don't really have their own products, but they build a tech that can be included in other products. And the first demo that I saw was a pad that maybe was the size of a keyboard, and using ultrasound only, it used ultrasound only, and I was able to float my hand sort of in front of this pad and immediately with gestures take control of a little on-screen robot that, you know, was on a monitor above the pad. And it was super articulate in terms of the detail. I could really get, you know, very fine motor control on this robot on the screen just by moving my hand. I didn't have to wear a glove. I didn't have to do anything. And so that was cool. And anytime I hit, like, a resistance point with the robot, I had haptic feedback coming back to my hand via ultrasound waves. Now, it wasn't enough to actually, like, provide resistance or anything, but it, you know, like, haptic feedback, you felt like little clicks on a dial and things like that. So that was like, whoa, that was cool. And then once I understood the tech, they said, great, sit in this chair. And it was a slot machine style chair, although there were no levers. There was a screen.
Okay.
And yes, you could interact with this haptic thing and all of that, right? But the cool part was it was using the same tech to track where my face and specifically where my eyes were in real time. And I sat down and it took a split second for it to, you know, orient itself to me. And then suddenly I saw a 3D image that I could see no matter where I moved my head or what I did, because in real time it was tracking my face, knowing where I was, and projecting the right and focusing the right 3D stereo image at my eyes, so that no matter how I looked at it, I was looking at exactly the right thing to see 3D without glasses.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And this is why CES can be fun, because you can stumble onto things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's already in use. Like, they had these machines in, I don't know, a dozen casinos throughout Vegas already.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's this totally immersive thing. Of course, thankfully, I was doing it in a booth where it didn't cost me anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Wow. That sounds really interesting to try with the 3D without glasses.
The 3D without glasses was really, it felt so natural. But yet obviously it was the first time I'd ever experienced that.
Yeah.
Other than real life, you know.
Right.
But to play a video game-ish kind of thing without, like, and have it be totally immersive. In fact, I wasn't being immersive enough at first. They were like, dude, you got to put your hand, like, deep into that. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to touch the screen. They're like, the screen is way further away than you think. Like, oh, got it.
Yeah. So that's the fun thing about CES, is walking down an aisle and finding something like that where it's super interesting. And then, you know, and this is the kind of stuff I love, not because like of what they're doing themselves with the casino machines, with slot machines, but more about like what that could mean down the line, you know, in a couple of years, what somebody could do with that kind of technology. That sounds really awesome. So that's very cool. I want to thank both of you for being here today. You can read more of the coverage of CES from live at CES. We do have a link on the front page to the CES 2019 archives. And I want to thank both of you for coming here today after all of the after all of the travel and everything of yesterday. I'm glad you all made it out okay. Thank you, Dave Hamilton, for being with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
And thanks, John, for coming on and talking to us about HomeKit. And you may have to come back and talk to us more about the humidity sensor when it shows up.
And once I learn to write a script.
Yeah, that too. That's going to be important. With that, this has been the Daily Observations Podcast for Friday, January 11th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamond. I will talk to all of you on Monday. Until then, be excellent to each other.